Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by our expert guests as we look ahead to the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship from three magnificent courses in Scotland and the Sanderson Farms Championship from Jackson, Mississippi. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners age 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, as mentioned, we've got three special guests today. We've got a couple of golf writers in Dave Tindall and Niall Lyons, and also broadcaster at Sky Sports, it's Kit Alexander. Gents, great to have you. There is only one place we can start before we dive into this week's action. It is last week's. Kit, I'm coming to you first. What an amazing week at Marco Simone for us Europeans. What did you make of it? Was it better than you ever expected?
It genuinely was better than I expected. A little bit of recency bias, but it might be the best one I can remember since Medina, and obviously how that played out in terms of my enjoyment of watching all 3 days. And it was 3 days of just sensational, scintillating golf, as you said. Mostly from a European perspective, maybe any American listeners might not have seen it through those rose-tinted spectacles. But it was just a hugely impressive performance from Team Europe all around. It's rare that kind of everyone shows up and everyone gets a point or half a point on the board, even in a winning effort, to be fair. And from moment one in the foursomes, Europe were in charge, took the foursome session 4-0 on the first day, 7-1 in total. And that just set us up. Then we just needed to be decent and competitive in the four balls. And we were more than that, obviously tying the singles and edging that. That Friday evening session was absolutely vital as well, turning some of those matches around just to quash any momentum that the Americans had, because we saw on Sunday, and we know from previous Ryder Cups, that it only takes that little bit of momentum and the entire match can shift. So I thought it was an absolutely engrossing 3 days of golf and a magnificent performance from Europe right the way through. I mean, we were going in as favourites at the very last minute. I think the bookies sort of turned it round. So by the time they did actually tee off, but I think if you'd have told a lot of people 6 months ago, certainly 12 months ago, this was going to be the result, you'd have got a lot of sniggers and a lot of laughter. And I always liked our chances. I've been championing us as the favourites for the last 6 months or so, looking at how the teams were shaping up. But I think it was beyond the hopes of even the most optimistic European fan and player or vice captain or captain for that matter, that it did play out like it did. It was utter domination with just a little bit of an American fight back on the Sunday, which kept things interesting. So for the overall competition, that was good. But ultimately, dominance from Europe from the first tee shot, and I loved every second of it.
Yeah, it was. There were plenty of surprises in there. As you say, a few months ago, it didn't look that way. One person who, you know, thought the 15-8, I think Europe hit, Niall mentioned, was Niall. Where did it go wrong for the US? I know you sort of back then, I think it would be close, and in the end it wasn't overall. It was quite similar to Paris. What did you make of all the action there?
Yeah, I was taken by the price, as I mentioned off earlier. You know, 68 months ago, USA were about 8-15, and then they drift towards 5-4 and 13-10 on the week. I found it just a wee bit hard to turn down. But I think there was, whilst Donald was exemplary in everything that he'd done and the decisions he made, I think there were some questionable decisions on the American side. I think we questioned in this pod, I think it was me and Ben on the week after the Americans made their picks, and the Sam Burns pick was certainly questionable, especially when you looked towards the likes of Keegan Bradley and what he might have brought to the American team. Obviously, we've seen in the end in the press conference, Justin Rose coming out with a great comment saying that, you know, great parents aren't just playing with your best mate. And I think that played out with Scheffler and Burns on day one. There was obviously a lot of talk about the illness going through the American camp that probably did have an impact on them. They did look a bit undercooked coming in. They hadn't played enough competitive golf on the way in. You got a question. Ricky Fowler was left out all day Saturday, and on Friday evening, Zach Johnson did say he was the most ill of all the 12 golfers. You know, why does he send them out on Friday morning then? You know, that's a big question mark. even the scouting mission that they'd done to Rome a few weeks previous was missing three players. Obviously, Jordan Spieth had a good excuse, but here Cantlay and Schofield were on Cantlay's stag party. Where's the commitment there? So I actually think Patrick Cantlay coped very well over the weekend with what was the abuse that was hurled at him.
It probably helped him. I think his play was better after that came out than it was before. So I think it helped him.
Yeah, even in the press conference too, I thought he came across very well. He didn't really raise to anything, and you know, he was quite diplomatic. So I was kind of impressed with that. You know, you look to the course, and so much depended on how you played off the tee. Finding the rough was just almost a lost hole straight away. And USA had six of the bottom eight at the end of the week in strokes gained off the tee, which just wasn't good enough. It wasn't going to happen. And everything went right for Europe and everything went wrong for my punting.
Yeah. It's spot on with Cantlay. I was out there and for the first time ever, he gets a bit of stick for maybe being a bit more boring. He showed great personality and was loving it. It was only, I thought, when Joe LaCava maybe overstepped the mark on Saturday afternoon where things changed, and that certainly was lively. There were so many highlights throughout the week. On the tip side, it was from Ben Coley, who picked McIlroy, top Europe point scorer on the pod the week before, Max Homer as well. And it looked like the score was going to come in until Bob McIntyre got late points. We got a few halves. But Dave, for you, what was the moment you think that maybe defined that Ryder Cup and just a real standout either moment or player or partnership? What was it for you that that will stick with you?
It's when Shane Lowry missed that putt at the last one. No one was watching, but it landed all my bets.
So I
was always big on Europe winning this by quite a big margin because, history for one. The home team has won by a winning margin of 5 points or more in seven of the last nine Ryder Cups. It's getting stupid now. So I didn't see any reason to go away from that. So I picked 16-12 as my sweet spot and then went one either side of that. So I had 16.5, 11.5 at 15-1. And obviously you're thinking, well, that's landing. And then at the end, obviously everyone's interviewing Luke Donald and getting the reaction. You've no idea what's happening. I was like, what's this? And then Shane Lowry's on the green and you don't know, what is that a par putt, a birdie? And then he misses it and it flashes up game halved, 16.5, 11.5. And I'd also backed 6-6 in the single. So that landed as well. So it's weird, isn't it? It's just a little moment that means nothing to anybody really, but from a betting point of view, it was key. In terms of the Americans, I don't know, there's all these rumours swirling around and that they haven't got the same togetherness. It comes down to the fact that they're no good at foursomes, basically. As Kit said, we won them 7-1, Europe won them 7-1. And that repeats all the time. If you look back at other Ryder Cups on European soil, they're no good at the foursomes. But I suppose you can say, well, okay, I can see that on paper. And then you dig into why are they no good at the foursomes? I think to be good at foursomes, this is when the other elements do kick in. So I don't think Zach Johnson got them right. I think Justin Rose had it correct by saying you can't just put your mates together. I think they need to be more scientific. I think to hold up together in foursomes, I think that's when you need to be match fit. So too many of them were rusty. You've got, you can have one player maybe finds it. If your mate's rusty in foursomes, you're going to know about it. So it was just kind of a repeat performance. I mean, if you look at the rest of the match, the USA have held up well in four balls and singles. So it just comes down to those foursomes. So, and I wasn't convinced that there was any split in the camp because if you saw the kind of press conference afterwards. I was in Gleneagles in 2014. The atmosphere in that room was horrible after that. You could see they were completely divided.
The skewering of Tom Watson.
Yeah. And it was just like, oh, this is awkward. But in here, they just look like, I saw one mate a bit critical. It's a look, they're just like come off a stag party or something. But they were all sort of giggling away, chuckling. That didn't, to me, suggest a divided camp. So it's down to, in the end, I think, the preparation on the foursomes. I just don't think it was done rigorously or scientifically enough.
I think the preparation in general, coming in, most of your team hasn't teed it up for a month, over a month. That just can't happen. You, And you can say it boils down to the players as well, but I think there's got to be a little bit of pushback from Zach Johnson or his vice captains, whoever at the PGA America. You've got to look at that on paper and go, hold on, none of our guys are teeing it up in a month. Either play in the Fortinet where Thomas and Homer actually did. Oh, and by the way, they actually looked, I know Thomas faded a little bit in terms of the strokes game, but at least he looked like he was providing a spark early on, even when Spieth couldn't find the planet on the first couple of days. Homer was obviously their best player. And if you don't play the Fortinet, come and play the BMW PGA. Come and play the Irish Open. Like, there's big events going on around the world at great golf courses that would really prepare you for this and get you hardened. Come over to Europe 2 or 3 weeks earlier. Get used to the time zone. Get used to the environment. Like, I found it all a little bit disingenuous seeing the reaction to Scottie Scheffler crying to getting absolutely drubbed 9-7. He, a world number one, a long timer, a five-time major champion. You've just got drubbed by, you know, Victor Hovland, the hottest player on the planet right now, but a guy who 6 months ago wasn't a pro, and you've had a record defeat. And I don't want to just pick on Scottie Scheffler because it's not just him, but it was the reaction to it. He's there crying. And all I could see from American reaction was, oh, no, they do care. Look, this is what it means to them. Well, in the immediate aftermath of getting absolutely done 9-7, you're going to be annoyed. But none of them played an Italian Open in the lead up. 1 week of the year, come over and play an Italian Open. There's been three of them at Marco Simone. As has already been pointed out, three of them didn't come to the scouting trip 3 weeks before the actual event. That's not caring. Or at least it's not putting enough care into preparation. They care about the result, but actions, come and do it. Play an Italian Open. Come over 3 weeks before. Come over 2 weeks before. Get some match sharpness in a BMW PGA and have a week off like every one of the European players did, albeit Bob Mack. And that was not because he had longer off. He actually played the week before. Like, it's not rocket science. And the fact that they missed that so massively, and then coupled with Donald quite rightly putting foursomes out first when they're going to be the rustiest in a format that they don't like anyway, and you're already 4-0 down going into the afternoon, then we get a couple of momentum putts on 18 in the four balls, and suddenly, let's be honest, the match is done and dusted at essentially on Friday night. And that's what it boils down to. There's got to be better planning and better strength from the captains and better ownership and responsibility from the players. If you don't want to get drubbed 9-7 and be broadcast around the world crying because you've just had a record defeat, maybe come and play at the course before the actual event.
Well said, right, Kit.
I think they thought their prep was coming over to Rome, having a pizza, having a look at the course and going home again. Yeah. Not enough.
Yeah, and Zach Johnson calling the stats guys nerds probably doesn't help as well when Dodo's come in and absolutely knocked it out of the park for Luke Donald. As we've done in Europe since Paul McGinley sort of really started looking at the stats sides back at Glen Eagles. And that again goes back to that Rose comment of don't just play with your mates, look at the stats, see what the course is going to do, put pairings together that are going to work. I just think we were far better organised this time and played better as a result. Again, that Rose quote that having the analysis and the data is one thing, but then the players have to go and deliver. Well, that is exactly what happened for Team Europe this time around. They got the analysis and the data spot on, and the players more than delivered to their level and above it.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, there has been some rumours flying around. It's going to be fascinating to see the fallout on the American side. And on the flip side, the praise for Luke Donald. Will he go again? We'll find out. I mean, we could talk about
this. Two more years.
I mean, we could talk about it long, for many, many hours, but it is probably time to move on because we have a cracking couple of events this week and still some Ryder Cuppers featuring as well. So let's start off with the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. Yes, that's right. DP World Tour is back. It's an absolutely fantastic event that we're come back to from Carnoustie, St Andrews and King's Barnes. Of course, it's the Alfred Dunhill Links Championships. You see great players, you see big celebrities, which guarantees some interesting shots as well on your coverage. And it's always a cracking pro-am style of tournament. 10 of the last 11 winners here have ranked inside the top 10 for greens in rag shows. It is very important. They're a real premium on that, and we have some Ryder Cuppers in there. We've got some hungover likes of Tommy Fleetwood, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Bob McIntyre there, and other big names, a defending champ. We've got Ryan Fox, and we've got Billy Horschel, and Matt Kuchar as well on the American side. It is such an amazing course and event. Everyone loves it. The whole town gets out. But it is an interesting betting one with three different courses, some a lot easier than others. Let's go through each. So, Niall, we'll start with you. If you can tell us a bit about, we're going to give you each a course. So we're going to go with King's Barnes first for you, as that is regularly one of the easier ones. What do we need to know about this place?
Yeah, as I say, it's certainly the easiest of the three. And the players will just hope that they get the right course on the right day. So much of this event is down to luck and down to weather. And if you get the wrong course on the wrong day, you'll find it really tough to compete. As I say, King's Barn's definitely the easier of the three. It's incredible looking back at this event how many winners have had a Lynx pedigree. It's an incredible rota of winners. You look down the list, obviously just in recent years, you've got Fox, Hatton, Nolas and Grace, guys who all have a great pedigree on Lynx courses. Even the one who you might question, you think, oh, he didn't, it's Victor Perez. And then, you know, you find out afterwards that he had just moved to Scotland previously and nobody knew beforehand. Otherwise, we all would have been on. But yeah, it pays to concentrate, obviously, on those golfers this week.
Yeah, that's right. And here we go from the easiest King's Bar to, as it's known, Carnasty. What can you tell us about that? I believe you've shot a really tasty score around there back in the day.
I got brutalised by it. It's honestly the toughest golf course I've played in my life. And I did play it in 30 mile an hour winds. It was really, really difficult conditions. But let's put it this way. It's the only round of golf in my life where I've had to hit 3 wood into a par 4 5 times. And that was not off the tip, so I can tell you that now. You know, when you go to that 18th hole and you go off sort of the punter's tees and then look back to where the pro, they're 80 yards behind it, it's horrific. It's just an incredibly difficult golf course that asks all the right questions of you, especially that finish as well. It is a tough finish. And again, you know, Niall's absolutely spot on. You do not want to play Carnoustie in the toughest weather conditions. I've had a little look at the weather. So, you know, this week, Thursday looks actually the best conditions. It's going to be a bit wet, but only 10 miles an hour of wind. Friday, we're looking at sort of 15 to 18 miles an hour of wind with that damp rain continuing. Clears off on Saturday, but then you've got the most wind at sort of 18, even up to 20 mile an hour. So I think you want to be playing the toughest course on the easiest day. So I would go Carnoustie, which is undoubtedly the toughest course of these three. If you're starting there, looking at what the weather forecast is right now, that's probably a nice touch.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, the weather is funny how crucial it is this. We often see that, don't we, in events, whether you want early, late start or late early, and it will play a massive impact here. Finally, Dave, we'll leave you with the most famous, the old course, which everyone obviously gets around. What can you tell us about it overall? Because we obviously see it the whole time, but you've always spent some time there.
That's the one we all know. Yeah, I was lucky enough to play it after the Women's British Open there. Can't remember when that was, about 7 years ago, something like that. A shotgun start. So I actually started on the 14th. So it was a bit sort of, that's not quite getting the experience, but I was quite pleased because you then get to play sort of 18 and 1 back-to-back, which felt quite enjoyable. I'm no good at golf. I'm off about 20. But I did par 18, 1, 2 and 3 in a little run. So that was a happy little memory from me. Having lost 2 balls on 17, let's balance that out. But our team actually won the competition. So we won a driver each. So I'm very happy memories of St Andrews. Yeah, in terms of the course, it's the one we all know. I think Tyrrell Hatton points out that the flags are more sort of bang in the middle, so it's easy for all the celebs to shoot scores. And there is a good stat. 9 of the last 14 winners of this tournament have been number one in par four scoring. Obviously, at St Andrews, you've got 2 extra par fours. So, again, it's one where you can see some crazy numbers, can't you? You can see, you know, even in open championships, you can get that run of scoring around the turn, maybe. So, I think if you play in the St Andrews on a nice day, you've got a good chance to shoot low 60s if it really goes your way.
Yeah, as I mentioned there beforehand too, like the Lynx courses, it's incredible the amount of courses that you look to here that can give you a pointer towards potential winners here. Don Pedro and Villamur is definitely one. You've had numerous performers here that have won the Portugal Masters, Harrington and Bjerregaard, two who've won both events come to mind, but there's numerous others who have played well in both as well. Obviously, you looked at all the Lynx courses across England, Scotland and Ireland for results like that too, but also Doha in Qatar. That's another course that really holds up in terms of Lynx play. So anyone playing well across those events, definitely worth looking to this week.
Yeah, it's always blowing in Doha. I think that's key, as well as the Lynx conditions on the ground of the grass and the firmness and the lies and the type of shots. It's breezy, and anywhere where there's wind and Qatar, it always blows at Doha. So that's a good shout.
I love that we're comparing all the climate between Doha and St Andrews, which is obviously just makes total
sense. It's a different type of wind.
Yeah. Different type of wind. Yeah,
that's different. Hairdryer versus stepping into the freezer.
That's Paul Laurie. No. Paul Laurie, Doha winner, hasn't he? There's loads of open winners who've won at Doha.
Yeah, there sure are. And with that, all of that information now we've got, it's probably time for some selection. So, Dave, I'll come to you first with your main outright, and now you can just follow straight back up. You can say why it was a great pick and then give us yours.
Yeah, Ollie, you mentioned the fact that 10 of the last 11 winners here had ranked inside the top 10 for greens in regulation. So I did look at the DP World Tour stats for that to see at number one in those standings, Jordan Smith. So I had a look at him and decided, yes, I do like him as a bet this week. He's got a bit of tournament form. He was fifth there in 2019, made the cut at St Andrews in 2022. And he's got some good form in Scotland as well. He was 12th at the Scottish Open. And just been noting him over the last few months because he played really well in the US Open and he's just continued that really. And then he got really close in France a few weeks ago where he was runner-up. So I think someone who just peppers the greens all the time has got a really good chance here. And yeah, with that fifth under his belt, I think he's got a good chance to win. If you look historically as well, this is really a good event, as you might expect for GB and Ireland players. 14 of the last 21 have been won by players from sort of local players, as it were. There's a few Scandies in there as well. Ryan Fox, I suppose, New Zealand, another sort of open. He sort of grew up in windy conditions. So yeah, there's something in that, I think. So Jordan Smith for me, he's around 28 to 1. You can get him. I think it's about time he won again. And after that near miss in France, I think he looks ready to get another win on the board.
That near miss in France is interesting you bring that up, because the manner in which he actually lost that and how much he looked in control, he went into the final round tied for the lead. And after two holes, he had a 6-shot lead, having started birdie, birdie and watching the guys around him stick it in the water. And then he never got anything going and he just frittered it away. Now, obviously he's playing great golf and he was superb for most of that week. But I was doing the commentary that week and Mark Rowe said immediately, that's going to really sting. That will hurt Jordan Smith. There's losing tournaments and then there's losing tournaments. It's the manner of it. This is the first time he will have teed up since then. I'm really intrigued to see mentally what Jordan Smith turns up this week, because on paper and in terms of performance, as Dave said, absolutely spot on. He suits it well. He's a really good player. He's so overdue a third win on the DP World Tour. It's not even funny. But it's, can he immediately bounce back from the manner in which he lost in France? I hope he can, because he's a great talent for the DP World Tour. But I'd keep an eye. I think the start he makes is really important. If he gets himself into the tournament early, I think, you know, you can not worry too much. If he has a tricky first round, first couple of rounds, I don't know if he'll fight back into it off the back of France, but we'll see.
I quite like it when I think the sort of COD psychology is to think that players are now complete sort of basket cases for the next year because, you know, they've had this terrible thing happen to them. I think there's a lot of evidence that if a player can get in that position again quite quickly, I think that the sort of memories sort of can work positively. So I think if he is in contention,
scar tissue gets worse over time, doesn't it? Yeah, that's definitely the key. Like if Ewan Ferguson springs to mind, who missed out narrowly, I think it was in Qatar, and then won in Qatar. He won quickly after having the really disappointing miss out. Whereas if that scar tissue builds, the first person that springs to mind is Francesco Molinari knocking it in the water at Augusta when he's twice on the back nine when he's looking really good a few years ago. And he's just not been the same player since. Now, there may be numerous reasons for that, but with anything that might cause scar tissue, it's a learning experience if you learn from it quickly. If you don't, then that scar tissue gets pretty hard to get rid of.
Worth noting that Jordan Smith's won in Portugal too.
So there's
a plenty going for it. I've been burnt with him far too many times now. I'm finding it tough to get involved around the 25-1, 28-1 mark. But my top selection is actually Callum Shinquin. I think he's actually playing really good golf lately. And a return to links is just come at about the perfect time. He obviously won there. He's won at Celtic Manor. That was his last win coming on these shores as well. But his ball striking has been great lately. Last time out in France, it was great again. He was in the top 10 at Wentworth, played absolutely unbelievable stuff, tee to green, had an ordinary week in the greens. Same happened again in France. Unbelievable stuff, tee to green, but a real horror show on the green. So he's been exceptional with his long game lately. And now I think just return to links has come at a perfect time. Second to Fox here last year, obviously. And then, of course, you cast your mind back, I think it was around 2017. He was beaten in a playoff by Rafa Cabrera-Bello at Dundonald. He's got three top 20s across Portugal and Doha, the two comp courses that that I mentioned earlier, and there's 80-1 out there this week for someone who's, you know, won just over a year ago on these shores too. I think it's far too hard to turn down. I think you're quite keen on him, Dave, as well this week.
Yeah, you touched on that 2017 event. I mean, that was one of the great bad beats for him, and obviously for anyone who backed him that week, because he had to par the par five closing hole to get the win. I think he was greenside in two, and he just took. Made a mess of it, somehow took four to get up and down and lost in a playoff. It's funny, I've always thought he would somehow, the sort of yin and yang and the sort of fate would mean he would win in Scotland at some point. And he has played really well in Scotland since then, so it's certainly a part of the world he loves. I know we're maybe looking at that, the longer the scar tissue sort of argument. I did just remember one actually for that. Do you remember when Kyle Stanley made a mess of Riviera? I think he took six, didn't he, and lost, and then he won the next week. Further positive there. So, Callum Shinquin, I think Niall's made all the right arguments from his iron plays come good. I particularly do like his strong record in this event and in Scotland. And yeah, the price, I was quite surprised actually. I thought he might be 66, even 50. So one quick thing that, again, is worth thinking about in terms of the Ryder Cup players. I think there's this lazy argument and feeling that, they're all completely drunk. They'll be running into a bush to be sick all the time. That they won't be at it. They'll have no interest. That is just a complete fallacy. If you go back through the years, there's so many examples of players who play well after the Ryder Cup. Even last time in Paris, you've got Fleetwood and Hatton finishing joint runner-up here, having come from Paris. And then the best example ever is Bernard Langer, 1991. He misses that putt at Kiawah Island. He should be just sort of, this is a disaster. Goes out the next week and wins the German Masters. So whether good or bad experience in a Ryder Cup, don't just presume that they're frazzled or drunk or just not able to play anymore. Why did they play in the Ryder Cup? Because they're fantastic players. So it can really sort of take you offline. So if you want to back a Ryder Cup player this week, you're perfectly entitled to do so, because I think that's just a sort of lazy argument. They won't be feeling it very well.
Yeah. Well said, Dave. They're also going to get absolute heroes welcome down the fairways from the crowds, which will spur them on more than ever. So we've got Shinquin still around 80s there, and that's Dave's second outright. Before we move into a little extras, Niall, you've got one more main outright for us.
Yeah, main outright, other one is Thorbjørn Olesen. Obviously, off the tee has been great the last couple of weeks at Wentworth in France. Quiet on the greens both those weeks as well. He finished 10th in France, but he's got a win here in 2015. second in 2012 and second and third in Doha as well. And he's one of the most prolific winners in the field. He's got seven DP World Tour wins, and I think another one's probably on the horizon. He's another one who can reach another level soon. And looking towards the Ryder Cup, he'd be an outside chance to make the next one, obviously, but he won't have given up hope of ever playing in a Ryder Cup, and he's certainly got the talent to. I've got a number of other picks as well, a couple of outsiders I may as well just mention here. I'll start with Eddie Pepperell. His iron play has been superb lately. There's been a couple of mishaps. There was one mishap in Ireland. He didn't perform well there at the K Club. Last time out at Wentworth, he shot a second round of 68, and his irons were tremendous that day. He just missed the cut on the number. But previous to that, he was 8th in approach at the Hanover Invitational, 4th in approach in Prague, and 5th in approach in Switzerland. His links pedigree is great as well. He's got he was 2nd at Royal County Downs, 3 top 20s in this event, and he's been 2nd, 3rd, or 4th Portugal. So I'm really keen to get those guys who've got those kind of records on those courses. And finally, I'll mention two massive prices around the 200 and 250 to 1 mark. Jason Scrivener, he's got 4 top 20s in Portugal and 5 cuts made on the trot. And the latest of those is at Wentworth, a top 25 finish at Wentworth, which was quite impressive. And I think if he turns up with a similar game, this is obviously a much more weakened field to what we've seen at the BMW PGA. So if he turns up with a similar game, he could probably make a mockery of that price of around 200 to 1. And finally, I'll throw in Rafa Cabrera Bello at 250 to 1, someone who's been off the boil for a long, long time. But he's got two Spanish events coming up in the next couple of weeks, maybe just worth keeping an eye on. He had a string of missed cuts, a real poor run in the middle of the year, but he shot a second round of 67 at Wentworth to make the cut there. And then all parts of his game came together in France, where he finished 20th, his first top 20 finish since March. So the really encouraging thing is two good efforts off the tee recently, which has been his main problem all year. So if he hits the ball well off the tee, you can expect some better results from the Spaniard. He obviously won in Dundonald back in 2017, and he's got runner-up finishes in Portugal and in Qatar. So I definitely think 250 to 1 is worth chancing for someone with his links pedigree and just bounce back to form these last couple of weeks.
When you mentioned Torbjørn Olesen, the word sort of inspiration came to my mind. We've just been in France the week before, where he played in the Ryder Cup at Le Golf National. He's obviously watched the Ryder Cup. I'm sure he will have watched having played it. There may just be that little spark, like you say, he's going to be thinking, I remember being in it in 2018. That's where we were 2 weeks. And I've just watched these incredible scenes in Italy. I want a piece of that. Sometimes that's all it takes for a player, just to find that extra little bit. Because he's been playing well this year, just hasn't had that little spark of inspiration. Maybe that's it. And then you chuck Cabrera Bello in there as well, another former Ryder Cup player who maybe, we know he's not playing near his potential at the moment. He started this season okay, had a few decent results, but maybe just watching the Ryder Cup and bringing back some of those memories of him playing in it and the type of golf he played to get there, that just flicks a switch maybe. All these little things I think are really interesting around an event that's so special and different, like a Ryder Cup. Can the former Ryder Cup players that didn't necessarily play in it this year take inspiration, because it makes them look back on their experiences and how they got there and how they played?
Yeah, I think that's bang on. Atmosphere-wise, it's not going to be hugely different from the Ryder Cup, which is very exciting for the guys. You get a taste, don't you? Like, wow, this is what it is. There are huge crowds, massive celebrity names. I saw Catherine Zeta-Jones is teeing it up for the first time, I think, this week as well. Maybe get a bet on her. If you fancy, Dave, you've got a couple of other monster prices as well, do you, to join alongside Niall's final extra ones to round it off?
Yeah, well, one's not a monster price, actually. It's more a morality tale. So in terms of Americans, so Billy Horschel, he did come over and play events. He played Wentworth, he played the Open de France, he was 20th in both. So it would kind of be a bit delicious, wouldn't it, if an American who did actually bother to put in the prep wins an event, just to sort of say, look what can happen if you come and sort of get acclimatized, you can do good things. He's actually got a good record in this event anyway. 10th last year, 36 before that. He was also 21st in the Open at St Andrews, which doesn't sound incredible, but Billy Horschel is terrible at majors. I had a quick look. That's actually his third best performance in 40 major starts. So I think he will enjoy this. Maybe as an American, he'll want to sort of maybe we'll show you kind of thing. I heard a few people saying he should have been like a vice captain because he's got that experience as well. He's a former match play champion. Why didn't they just pick him, to be honest? The more I think about it, he'd done a better job than some of them would. So that would be quite nice if Billy Horschel just showed the value of prep. He's 28-1. The big price one is Ross Fisher. Again, maybe you could say a bit of inspiration from the Ryder Cup, having played in one. He's a three-time runner-up in this event, so can really thrive here. He's second in greens in regulation, which I thought was a bit surprising this year because his results haven't been great. But if you look at his results, it's a bit of a case of feast or famine. There's a lot of missed cuts in there. But he's got eighth at the Made in Himmerland. He played quite well at the Irish Open as well. He was fourth with a round to go there. So there is some little sprinkles of good form from Ross Fisher. So it's one of those ones, back to a familiar scene where he's done really well before, as I say, three-time runner-up. He might just go well at 150-1.
With Ross, I quite like Lynx courses as well because he's a brilliant, brilliant ball striker, superb, really good putter. I remember how effective he was at Celtic Manor with Padraig Harrington, just reading all of his lines and then him hitting it where Padraig said and everything going in. If there is an area of the game that maybe lets him down a little bit, it is possibly chipping and short game, and you know, more links takes that out of play a little bit because you're playing different shots where you can get the Texas wedge to it, putt it. So I think that's a nice shout, and I'd love to see Ross Fish. He's genuinely one of the nicest, friendliest guys on tour as well, always says hello, just a lovely bloke, so I'd love to see him back playing well.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Well, there you go. Some big prices in there overall. We're sort of been dodging some of the Ryder Cuppers and some of the big names, but good seeing, hopefully. I mean, first time in a while we've had double up on Callum Shinquin. So get on if you fancy and agree with the boys' points. Before we move on to Sanson's Farms, it is time now for a quick game of Who Am I? Yes, if you're a first-time listener, you've missed out on weeks of great fun on Who Am I? Some real record-setting going on here. It is a game where I pick a player in the field this week who I like. This week it's in Scotland, and I'll give different clues. The boys might jump in. They might not. They might wait and just try for that one-hit wonder. So let's get started now. And the first clue is I am a previous champion of the Boys Amateur Championship. Previous winner of the Boys Amateur. Has Kit got it straight away? Is that a hand up from Kit? Okay.
Matthew Southgate.
Is not the correct answer. But interesting.
I like to go in early because I want that Hail Mary of getting it after one. Yeah. I'm just going to hold fire on this one.
Okay,
I've got a couple like bumping around in my head. But
yeah, love it. Okay, so clue number two is I represented Great Britain Ireland team at the 2015 Walker Cup at Royal Lytham, beating Maverick McNeely in the singles. He was amateur number two at that time.
Laurie Cantor.
Is incorrect.
I'm between two here.
Don't name. You might just put your
I'm
one more clue.
Between two, so I'm going to have to put one out there, and I'm trying to work out which. Connor Syme.
Incorrect. We'll go to three. I made my DP World Tour debut at this event in 2016. And I made the cut.
Grant Forrest?
Not Grant Forrest.
Oh.
Dave O'Neill, you're coming in for clue number three.
His name is Scottish player.
It's not Callum Shinquin, is it?
It's not. No. I imagine we had three ups on Callum Shinquin. No, it's not.
That would have been beautiful if it was. That really would.
Yeah, it would have been. No, sadly not. Dave's holding it, and I like that. That's patience. Okay. This one could be the one. Number four. I earned my full status after three runner-up finishes on the Challenge Tour in 2021.
Oh, that hurts. Ewan Ferguson.
Ewan Ferguson, yeah.
That's Ewan Ferguson. I thought the Challenge Tour.
The Scottish players, yeah. Should have, yeah. Why didn't we say
it? Oh, no, that's it. Exactly right. Ewan Ferguson, the last one.
I just had young Scotty or like youngish Scott in my head. I worked through all of them at Ewan Ferguson.
I was waiting for Callum Hill next and then I was thinking, right, Kit's not coming back.
That was one of the ones that was in my head as well after the first one. I was like, I'm sure it's a Scottish lad that won that boys amateur then and I couldn't remember which one it was.
I think he won it 10-9, I think, impressively. The fifth clue was that despite no wins on the Challenge Tour, he's lost belts. He's had two on the DP World Tour, which is a pretty formidable record. So he's someone I like this week. But just a reminder that if you love a game, but you don't want to bet, then the Fantasy Game is the perfect place to get involved. On the DP World Tour website, you pick six players for the week and you compete against your friends and family for bragging rights. And we've given you a few names in there, but maybe you can go better and get the top six. But that's a summary overall of the Dunhill Links Championship from Scotland. Now it's time to have a look at the PGA Tour. Yes, this also returns this week. It's the Sanderson Farms Championship, the second of seven of the new FedEx Full Tournaments that will determine the PGA Tour status for the 2023-2024 campaign. It comes from the Country Club of Jackson, and it's the 10th year it's hosted the Sanderson Farms Championship, which means we've got a good bit of data to go off, essentially. We can have a look. There's not three courses, and from what we can see, the winning score is always pretty low. A few notes say it's a bit of a, you know, putter's paradise. If you start holing them, you will go well. The average score of the last 10 years has been around the sort of 20 under mark. And what I found very interesting, Niall, I'll come to you first, is actually the winners' prices. Since 2014, the lowest has been 45-1 with Cam Champ, or Sam Burns in 2021 was around there. But we've had many, 250 Nick Taylor, Malnati 150-1. So is this somewhere where you can get a bit of a shock, do you think? And it's just who holds the most putts, essentially.
Yeah, well, there's certainly room for that at this time of the year in the fall season. But, you know, obviously, even with the change in the PGA Tour this year, you know, you potentially get even weaker feel. So there's massive opportunities for these guys. I would argue that it's not a putting contest. You know, you look at even last year, Straka, who was runner-up, he was 8th off the tee and 10th on approach. When Sam Burns won in 2021, he was 1st off the tee, 2nd on approach. Garcia was similar in 2020, 1st off the tee and 3rd on approach. So you look at the results here over the last couple of years, and really it's been the best ball strikers who have fought out this championship. It's obviously a par 72. It is a birdie fest, as you say. So you would look towards the birdie or better percentage maybe on the PGA Tour. That's one thing that I've done this week. There have been some players like Cam Champ who have won both the Fortinet and this. There's been other players who have played well in both of those events, namely Emiliano Grillo. The other courses you would look to are Detroit, that holds the Rocket Mortgage, and TP Twin Cities at the 3M Open, two more real birdie fests. But as you say, this time of the year and these events coming up here in the next couple of weeks, this is a time where rookies can often you know, get their first wins, and yeah, you further down the betting board, you definitely find some value.
Yeah, and Dave, how much do you think it will play on some of those guys' minds as youngsters, having watched the Ryder Cup, and just think, I want to be a part of that later in life? It is such a special moment, occasion, everything like that. Do you think, you know, there could be someone easily in this field that we see in Bethpage in a couple of years? Do you think that will have a big factor, and the importance also of, you know, getting a cart and starting the season very strong?
Yeah, anyone below 30 has got a dream to go to Europe and get hammered in a Ryder Cup. That's what I want to do when I grow up. Yeah, as Niall said, it's been a good event for guys looking for their first win. And yeah, I don't know really from an American point of view what you'd take from watching the Ryder Cup last week. Maybe you'd be thinking, all right, 2 years until the next one in America where we always win, I want to somehow get on that team. So that could act as fuel possibly. But in terms of a couple of things that Niall said, some correlating courses, I think Sedgefield, the Wyndham Championship, sort of geographically, I suppose, when that bottom corner of America. So that stands up quite well for looking at winners of this. I think par five scoring as well has been particularly strong here. So I think if you're good in the par five charts, I think that will help your cause this week. So, yeah, so I've got a couple of picks. Do you want me to lead off on my picks or?
Yeah, we'll do picks in just 1 second, because just want to look at the top of the market. And that is, of course, Ludvig Åberg, which we heard pronounced a few ways over the weekend. But I'm told that's right, around the 12-1 mark. Kit, what did you make quickly of his debut? Because we had some losses, we had some record wins.
It was
a fascinating week, and but generally, and his sort of his future as well on the back of that, because it's big travel after a big party and a big win.
I'm going Aubert. I think I'm committing to Ludwig Aubert. That's my, as if you were shouting at a bear.
Yeah.
Aubert. That's what I've been told. Just so impressive in general, the fact he only turned pro in June. You know, we mentioned his performance, 4 top 25s in 7 PGA Tour starts, including a tied fourth at the John Deere Classic, comes to Europe, finishes fourth, gets the win at the Amiga European, and then 10th at the BMW PGA in that very strong field. And that was fading to a 10th after starting strongly as well. So, you know, he is the real deal. He looks the real deal. He's what people said he was, and that is a potentially generational talent. He's arguably more comfortable in America than he is in Europe at this point, having done his years in college there, started over there, stayed in America courtesy of PGA Tour University with getting the full card. It's still, I find it a little bit jarring to see him top of the market. I just it feels short to me. I'm not saying he's not going to win, but from a betting perspective, it feels short. But last week he was impressive and kind of did what you would expect from a rookie, and a rookie with only a 3 months experience of being a pro. Looked great in moments, looked a little bit off it in moments, but that's the ebb and flow of the Ryder Cup, and he will have learned so much. And to have played alongside Victor Hovland and seen basically how the guy who's the best player on the planet right now got his ball around the course, and to be a part of a winning combination with him, I think will go a very, very long way. And, you know, he got beaten by Brooks Koepka in the singles pretty convincingly, but Brooks Koepka's a 5-time major champion with, you know, a lot of experience under his belt. Again, it's another learning thing. So I think you can only take positives from what Ludwig Aubert has done to start his career professionally, and what he showed when being a somewhat contentious but ultimately very correct Ryder Cup pick last week.
Yeah, I kind of surprised. I was almost expecting him to pull out yesterday following the Ryder Cup. I mean, obviously that hasn't materialized yet. I mean, it could still happen. But I think whilst, you know, Fleetwood, Fitzpatrick and McIntyre head to Scotland, and they can almost, well, even though they're not making the trip together, because we saw Bob McIntyre get on his Jet 2 flight back to Glasgow yesterday. But I thought even just the three of them coming back to Scotland, you know, they're kind of doing it together, whilst, you know, Ludwig Aubert is the only one heading from the 24 to...
It's worth noting, though, he's got stuff to play for next year. So he's got his PGA Tour card, courtesy of PGA Tour U, but you look at his FedEx Cup ranking, he needs to move up to get into designated events, or if he can get into the top 50 by the end of this year, he's 80 currently, you know, that gets him into all the majors next year. If he can get a win, that gets him into the Century Tournament of Champions. So this is actually a big few weeks for Aubert. We know the talent, but you've got to be in the big events to show that talent. And he's currently still got a little bit of work to do to make sure he is in all those biggest events where he belongs to be next year. So that's why I think we are seeing him this week, and we'll see him a few more times on these fall events on the PGA Tour, because he needs 2 or 3 big results to make sure he's in the majors and the designated events next year.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, 10 or 11 to 1, I kind of disagree with that. I think it's a short price because, you know, you looked at him just at the BMW PGA a couple of weeks ago when he was 22, 25 to 1 then, and obviously led after 3 days by a couple of shots. And you look at this, and, you know, Eric Cole is second favorite, and you're getting 10, 11, 12 to 1. It was 12 to 1 even yesterday about him. You know, if this wasn't the week after the Ryder Cup, I would be banging down the bookmakers' doors to get 12 to 1 about him to win in a field of this quality. So I think over time it'll prove to be, if he lives up to all our expectations, which I hope and I expect him, he will do. It's maybe just come at the wrong time, the week after the Ryder Cup. Maybe he's not a party animal. Who knows?
He didn't, I don't know. On the little videos that we've seen, it's kind of McIlroy and Shane Lowry leading the party on the bus.
Yeah, he looks quite quiet or something.
He's sat quite nicely in his seat. I don't think he's the most Yeah, kind of animated.
It's a bit of a generational difference, I think, that some of the guys in their sort of late teens, early 20s coming through now, culturally, there's maybe not such a drinking culture. I think Nikolai was probably relatively
quiet, I think,
by comparison to Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy and Tommy Fleetwood and Justin Rose anyway.
I think Oberg is your sort of classic sort of cool Swede who's just sort of got a nice temperament. So he'll be fine this week, I think.
Well, here anyway, I'm not backing him this week, but I'll kick off. I'm going with Ben Griffin. He's my top selection. He started off his maiden season actually really, really well. He was finished 12th at the Sony, and 21st at the Honda, and 14th at Bay Hill, all in very decent fields. Results then took a turn for the worse, but he missed plenty of cuts, but he was definitely playing better than what his results suggested. And then a couple of months ago, he made the trip to Scotland. He was 25th there. You know, a very decent performance for someone. That was his first trip outside the USA to Europe. He missed the cut on the number the following week at Royal Liverpool, which was a fair effort too. Just one more putt dropping would have made the weekend there. And then since he's finished 20th at the 3M Open and 24th at St. Jude, he's inside the top 40 on the PGA Tour in birdie or better percentage, which I think, you know, is important on a birdie fest like this week. And he was top 25 here last year in debut, two of the four rounds being 66 and 68. One of the negatives you'll find with plenty of golfers here this week, and one of the things you got to take into account, that a lot of them have had 6 weeks off. They haven't played golf in a long time. But you look back to his results, he had 6 weeks off from November 2022 to the start of 2023, and his first effort was 12th to Sony last year. Prior to that, at the start of 2022, he had 6 weeks off as well, and he was 8th in Bahamas on the Corn Ferry Tour. So he starts quite well seasons, so 6 weeks off I don't think will bother him. And around 50-1, he's one of those guys who I think could, you know, get off the mark.
Beautiful. Dave, who are you throwing in as your outright?
Yeah, I think I'm going with Bo Hostler. I think it's a guy who is due a win. We've been saying that for quite a long time, but I think this could be a good week to get him. It's a weak field. I was looking actually at Bo Hostler's sort of overall record. He's made the cut in 7 of his 9 majors. I mean, that's in this field, that's pretty good going, to be honest. That shows that he's got maybe an extra touch of class. I like some of his stats. He's 38th in par 5 scoring. He went to university in Texas, so I think experience of playing in the South, that's quite good. He was 10th here on debut. Played the Fortinet as well, what Niall said about a lot of players having a break. So he's got a relatively recent run under his belt. Just his form, he's got 5 top 30s in his last 6 starts, 6 at the Barracuda, 20th at St. Jude, again in the South. And I did dig out some quotes by him where he said, my game feels probably the best it has in years. So he's clearly thinking that something's brewing, something's going to happen. And I think this could be a good week to catch Bo Hostler. I thought the price 40-1 was pretty reasonable in a field where, as Niall says, it's like, I don't want to be knocking Eric Cole here, but if he's second favourite, it's not the best ever field. So it's just a chance maybe to sneak that win. And this has been a good event for those looking for to make the big breakthrough. So I'd be annoyed to miss Bo Hostler, I think, if he does get a win. And 40-1, I thought, was a good price.
Cool. Well, Niall, you've had 2 points each way on you, Ben Griffin, and you've got a triumvirate of 1 pointers each way on a few others. Is that right?
Yeah, I'll start with Peter Quest, who's around 66-1. He's, you know, achieved a lot, really, in his short time in the PGA Tour so far. He's not really, I'm sure, a familiar name with many golf fans, but he was a Monday qualifier a couple of months ago with the Rocket Mortgage and took that chance and finished 4th. He actually nabbed the first round lead that week as well. That obviously got him into the next week at the John Deere, and a top 20 there got him special temporary membership. So he's taken his opportunities, and, you know, he looks the real deal. And I think almost similar to the way Cameron Champ came and won this event back in 2018. It's kind of a similar type of golfer. Peter Quest is comfortably the longest off the tee in the field. Hits the ball an absolute mile, and he's riding the crest of a wave at the minute. His iron play is pretty decent as well. even last time out at the Fortinet, he had a miscut, but his ball striking was good across those two rounds. It was a poor week in the greens, which is kind of surprising for someone, you know, who grew up in California, used to Pohanna greens. But, you know, nevertheless, maybe over time we'll see that he prefers Bermuda, and, you know, this is a good chance for him. I'll mention two others quickly. Kevin Yu, I think he's been quite unfortunate this season due to injury. He had knee surgery earlier on in the year, but his ball striking for most parts of the year has been absolutely tremendous, which is, you know, hugely important here, as I mentioned earlier on. He had about 4 months off, and he came back at the Travelers, made the cut. 2 weeks later, he was sixth to John Deere. And I think he's just kind of suffered from you know, a lack of momentum. You know, after that, he travelled to Scotland, something he's not used to, and then back for the 3M Open. He's missed a couple of cuts since. His latest in California was a bad effort off the tee, which really isn't, which is so uncharacteristic of his golf this year. You know, he's done quite well. He was third in Bermuda the late part of last year as well, this around the same time, seventh at Pebble Beach, and obviously sixth at the John Deere, as I mentioned. So it's a decent season for him. And he's best in the field, birdie or better percentage. I think he ranks seventh on the PGA Tour this year. And he was top 20 here on debut. So there's a lot to like about Kevin Yu. And I think maybe if he just gets 3 or 4 weeks playing golf in a row, you know, he could benefit from that. And finally, I'll mention Colin Tarrant. Obviously, an Englishman who may look, you know, dreams of a Ryder Cup performance may be a bit far-fetched. Who knows? We'll see in the next couple of years. But he certainly looked at those guys, the English guys in the Ryder Cup team, and maybe use them as inspiration. He missed the cut here on debut, but then last year he shot rounds of 68, 68, 69 after an opening 73 to finish 13th. So he hasn't been around an awful long time, but he has went pretty close at the RSM Classic, finishing second there. So I do think guys who come onto the tour and then, you know, go very close to winning, you know, even as we mentioned earlier on, scar tissue and stuff, not that, you know, he has an awful lot of that, but I think experience in the heat of battle counts for a lot. And recently he was 13th at the 3M Open and 7th at the Fortinet. So his ball striking has been great this last couple of efforts too. So he's one I think who could, you know, after the Ryder Cup, watching the Ryder Cup last week, could just maybe hit another level. And yeah, he's certainly talented enough to take an event of this quality.
It's an interesting story with Callum Tarrant, because obviously he is English and 33 years old, so he's been around a bit, but not a guy that I think most European golf fans would be that familiar with. I mean, he attended Radford University, not one of the bigger schools in America, in Virginia. And only actually his first sort of foray into professional golf was in China. He went through the PGA Tour China route, won their Order of Merit in 2018. That got him onto the Korn Ferry Tour, and he's worked his way up. And he's now got quite a lot of PGA Tour starts under his belt. And, you know, as Noah said, he's flashed some good finishes. I think he had a reasonable little run in a US Open either this year or last year, I seem to remember as well. And yeah, I think he's a player who's found his feet. He's obviously comfortable in America, from Darlington originally. So I don't know how many similarities there are there, but he's found his feet in the States and he looks more and more comfortable all the time. So yeah, I think a name that possibly an Englishman we don't know as much about as we should over here, but maybe if he can have a good week this week and find his comfort zone even more in America, someone we will become more familiar with.
I tell you what, finding a player Kit doesn't know something about is harder than finding a winner in a random event. I just threw that to Noah and straight, I don't know much. And you've basically given Callum Tarrant's life story, which is a phenomenal effort. But he's definitely one to keep an eye out for. And these low scoring events, we seem to see his name pop up a fair bit. Dave, can you finish us off here with some of your other selections this week?
Yeah, just on Callum Tarrant, I always think he seems to be up there in round one a little bit. I can remember him playing well in the US Open, actually, you know, which shows he's got some game. So maybe look to him in the first round leader market. I'm going with a young player, a Davis Thompson, 50-1. If you look at this event, we're in Mississippi. You get your American map out and you look down that southeast side and you've got... and then they look to the list of winners. There's lots of them with sort of ties to that area, whether they've played college there, whether they lived there, were born and raised there. It is a thing. You do get players who cluster their results. So like David Toms, for example, always used to be worth a bet. He's from Louisiana, isn't he, Shreveport? He won his major down in Atlanta. Not Atalanta, I've got Italy on the brain, you see. So he won his major there. I think Sam Burns, maybe he clusters around there.
Yeah.
There's other strange stories. Is it Tom Watson didn't win in Florida? Is that a stat? Is that a true statement, I think? There's strange sort of things where players certainly do have their favourite parts. Mickelson in California was always a big one. Davis Thompson, he's from Alabama, so again, that's down in that region. So I think he'll be comfortable with the grasses and the general climate that we'll see. I do put emphasis on par five scoring this week. He's fifth in that category, so he can absolutely take advantage of those longer holes. 22nd at the Wyndham, which correlates quite well, which I thought was quite a nice knock. He played the Fortinet, played quite well, actually. He was 30th, but he was a little bit better than that after three rounds. Just faded away a bit with a 74. And he's also got a bit of course experience. A young guy, but he's played this event twice, made the cut both times, shot a couple of nice rounds on debut. So I thought at 50-1, he was worth a look. Now I'm going to turn into Alan Partridge and whine. Kind of shock you. I like Eric Cole because even though I've just sort of put him down, I can't quite get away from him. We've used him as like a barometer of where the pricing is. But he's got a lot of things going for him, Eric Cole. He's 14th at the Wyndham, 4th at the Fortinet, runner-up at the Honda Classic, again, kind of in the south, 23rd in par five scoring. So as much as I looked at the price and thought, he's got a lot of things in his favour this week. And I don't know, it's kind of, I mean, he's a bit of an older guy, isn't he? He's just sort of come from, Kit will probably have a load of information on him, but he's come from, you wonder where, I think when he started appearing, you think, well, who's this? Is he like some 21-year-old? And he's not at all. But he has had an amazing year. I just think maybe 2023 will be his year, and at some point, and this fall series events where there's weaker fields, he might just sneak in for the win. I mean, he should have probably won the Honda, but I don't think, that will forever haunt him. I think he will get other chances to win. So, yeah, I thought he's worth a go. Then finally, Garrick Higo, the South African left-hander. Again, really good player on the par fives. He won the Palmetto Championship a couple of seasons ago, and then he had that run of wins in Europe as well. So he's a guy who sort of knows how to win, which a lot of them in the field maybe don't have a feeling of getting it done, getting over the line. And he was third in this event when he played it last time. I've been following him for a little while, so I'm possibly just chasing him a little bit. But I think you can get 66-1 on Garrick Higo. So I always think a guy who knows how to get it done, if you can get big prices on him, he's not the most consistent. He will suddenly like pop in an event after not some great form. But I think he's left enough hints in recent weeks to suggest he might just go well. And yeah, the fact that he plays the par fives really well statistically suggests he might just sneak in. So yeah, Eric Cole, I have shocked you, and Garrick Higo.
Love it.
And enjoyed the twist there after the sort of, it can't be that good a feel, Eric Cole's second favourite. And then the twist of picking him, I love that.
No,
Higo's great player, record winner on the DP World Tour, has the lowest winning score ever. As you say, won very quickly on the PGA Tour, quiet for a year. We need to see more from him, but still so young. And yeah, Eric Cole, late bloomer, absolute menace on the minor tours in America for a while before really sort of breaking through. I mean, he just hoovered up title after title in the sort of 1 and 2 day, 3 day events around his part of America. Good pedigree. I mean, his dad was a PGA Tour winner. His mum was a very, very good pro as well. So comes from good golfing stock, seems to have found his feet. And, sometimes it has to come to people a little bit later. I like that. You look at the Miguel Angel Jimenezes of this world who find their best golf in their late 30s and their 40s. And for all these young superstars that come out and are brilliant from the get-go, the Højgaards, Ober, Rahm, whoever else, Spieth, Thomas, when they came out, it's nice when you have someone that actually has worked their way up and struggled a bit and doesn't find their best stuff until their 30s. And that's certainly the case with Eric Cole, and golf is a type of sport where that can happen. And I think even as we see these young studs come through, there'll always be these stories of players emerging later and fighting their way up. And Eric Cole's kind of the poster boy for that right now on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I feel like we can't talk about successful older golfers without Tongtai JD, the former Thai paratrooper. And he's had a win recently. Every Sky Sports commentator will let you know every single time that he did do that at Once Upon a Time. But plenty of names in there on both events. We've covered what? From Rome to Edinburgh or St Andrews and across to Mississippi. So now time for a quick recap on all of those names. We'll start with Dave Tindall's picks this week. And in the Alfred Dunhill Lynx Championship, it was Jordan Smith and Callum Shinquin as his main picks. And then mentions for the American, Billy Horschel, and also long shot Ross Fisher. Then over in Mississippi, Bo Hostler and David Thompson were his headline selections, followed by Eric Cole and South African Garrick Higo. Niall Lyons liked Callum Shinquin as well, and Torbjørn Olesen at the Dunhill with extra picks of Eddie Pepperell, Rafael Cabrera-Bello and Jason Scrivener. And in the Sanderson Farms Championships, it was Ben Griffin and Callum Tarran alongside Peter Quest and Kevin Yu to round off his selections. Yes, that's everything covered off this week. Fantastic input from all of our guests. Thank you so much for that. Before we go, I'll let you know where you can find them on Twitter. And from each one, it may seem early, but we're going to clip this out and we're going to put it out in 2 years' time. I want a winner and score prediction from Beth Page, because that's what everyone wants to know. We'll get an early anti-post up. So we'll start with you, Niall. Bet Golf World, 2 years out. What's happening in New York in a couple of years?
The 2020 Fairway Cup was priced up immediately thereafter, and even money was thrown up about the Yanks from most firms, which is absolutely incredible, because I think they'll go off closer to 1-2. And I'll go for the home advantage, absolutely hammering home again. I'll go for the USA, 18-12.
Two extra That's points there as well.
No, 18-10. They've got extra points.
18-10. Oh, sorry, 18-10, yeah, sorry.
No, yeah. We like it. And then maybe they're going to change 18-10. And have a player in there. Perfect, okay. Dave, Dave Tindall Golf on Twitter, what are you going?
Yeah, 56-0. There will be a change in format. I've got to go with this idea, haven't I, that the home team just dominates, and I just think it'll swing back to them. 16-12.
What price do they go off, Dave?
Yeah, like you say, I know it's a long wait, isn't it, to have your cash kind of wrapped up, but yeah, they go off at 8-13, shorter than that, probably 4-9, who knows, yeah. Who knows? I mean, look, the landscape could change in the next 2 years. We just don't know, but right now they seem a cracking bet at that price, even money.
Okay, at Kit on the Course, Kit Alexander, are you giving European fans a bit more hope?
No. The number that I had in my head was exactly what Dave's just put out, 16-12 to the Americans. We've spoken about it with respect to Europe being dominant at home earlier in this podcast. A home advantage is massive. I think 16-12, you know, we had the stat earlier, how many have been won by five or more points? I think is it like five of the last seven home Ryder Cups or something? If we get within four, I actually think as an away result, that's pretty good. So I would go 16-12, but Europe to be more competitive away from home than the last three away from home teams have been in the Ryder Cup.
Okay, we like that. That's a nice positive note to end on. That is it for this week. But join us next week for the Acciona Open de España presented by Madrid at Club de Campo VM de Madrid. And also on the PGA Tours, the Shriners Children Open in Las Vegas. But until then, enjoy the golf. Good luck with your picks this week and see you next time on The Tips.